Welcome to IKP's Digital Film Podcast, where we literally discuss everything and anything in the digital film world, and even some analog stuff. I mean, we may cover Betamax all the way to 4K, Hi8 tapes, VHS tapes, the history of DVD, HD DVD, and Blu-ray format war, TVs, CRTs, floppy disks, 8-track tapes. Who knows? I'm fucking jumping all over the place here. But yeah, that's what you get here at the IKP's Digital Film Podcast. You might learn something, you might not, you might laugh till you shit your pants, who knows? But for the next 45 minutes to an hour, we'll try and give you at least some digital film entertainment. So kick back, relax, and enjoy our sexy digital film podcast. Yeah. Welcome back to IKP's Digital Film Podcast. IKP being Impulse Kitty Productions, just in case the acronym was lost somewhere. I want to still make sure people know what it means. Yeah, I haven't done a podcast in a little bit. Was kind of working, got caught up with some stuff, but I did have something to say. I don't know how long this podcast will be, but let's see how long I could talk and entertain you, or at least till I stop entertaining myself, because, you know. But anyway, so I recently bought a new AVR for my home theater system. Now, sound design and sound, it's one of those things that's always been kind of lost on me. I can tell it's more or less, and sound is so subjective, more so than I think a calibrated television has a standard color gamut that it should be at. And once it's set, you know, you're familiar with those colors and they look organic and whatnot. But I believe that sound design or just sound altogether can be very subjective, because a lot of people love heavy bass. A lot of people love flatter bass, higher trebles, different EQs, different people. And it's more or less how you've been introduced to audio, or how you grew up listening to music, and what equipment you've bought over the years, whether you are an audiophile and you know exactly what to look for, and or you're not. You know, I'm one of those guys that wasn't really an audiophile. But not to say that I do not appreciate Blu-ray's DTS HD master audio tracks and Dolby Digital's True HD lossless audio tracks and PCM. You know, I definitely can tell the difference between those three tracks at different times. And over the past couple of years, I've, with regular DTS and Dolby Digital, I remember buying Superbit DVDs when they came out that had the DTS tracks. I would just fucking try and find anything with DTS because it was so rare. You know, DTS didn't have a home. It was always Dolby Digital 5.1. And when you got that DTS DVD, it was fucking amazing. The sound was always much better. I always, even now when I watch Blu-rays, I notice that the DTS Master Audio HD tracks have a little more clarity, almost a, I know this is going to sound stupid because it's audio, but the only word I can think of is a tangible quality to the audio. It's almost audio that you can, it's fucking HD audio. That's the only thing I can describe. And so is Dolby Digital True HD, but I feel that a lot of the Dolby Digital True HD tracks seem a little more dampened, or I don't know how, maybe they're mixed a little bit different. It's really good still. Like, I'm fucking, like, I've come across Dolby Digital True HD tracks that fucking mirror DTS tracks. And then I've come across more crappy Dolby Digital tracks, whether they be True HD or regular Dolby Digital, than DTS tracks. Usually DTS Master Audio HD or regular DTS audio tracks have consistency in the way they sound. And ultimately, you know, the PCM uncompressed Blu-rays out there that have the PCM uncompressed tracks are clearly the winner. But I love DTS, and I'm glad it found its home in Blu-ray, because for the longest time, me and my cousin, seriously, we would hunt these Superbit Blu-rays down I mean DVDs down just because of the DTS. And there were certain DVDs that were in DTS. I remember Interview with the Vampire. You picked up the DVD and it had a DTS track on it. So it kind of disappointed me a lot when it came out on Blu-ray and it was just fucking Dolby Digital True HD and no DTS at all. So it pissed me off. I remember watching, there was a Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola's version. I bought a super bit version of that. I remember literally watching in DTS and enjoying the fuck out of it, fucking hearing shit behind me. It was just, it's something that for some reason or another Dolby Digital couldn't do. Now, maybe it was my setup, my AVR, whatever, but I usually try and take any DSPs off, any digital sound processing off of the AVR. I send the Blu-ray player to Bitstream and let the fucking, AVR do its thing. It's there to decode and do its thing. And a lot of AVRs or home theater in a box or sound bars have a lot of DSP modes to, try and equalize these non-organic sounds like jazz mode or pop mode or concert hall or bathroom mode or some bullshit processing. So I usually, shut those off and go for just, you don't have to enhance a DTS HD master audio track. You don't have to enhance a Dolby Digital True HD lossless audio track or a PC. It's fucking, you want to hear it for what it is, and you want to hear it as the mixer intended you to hear it. And for me, I like I said, I can tell between those tracks, but then I'm also that type of guy, like, hey, if I can listen to an MP3 or WAV file, I usually can't tell the difference in quality. If it sounds good to me, I've always just kind of like, I'm just not a sound design guy. Even in my post work, it's I struggle to do sound, and I do a lot of things out of necessity. I'm very semi-adept to editing and color correcting. Very more comfortable directing and behind the camera, and that's where I shine the most. But in the post end, I usually kind of struggle and putter along, if you will, because it's out of necessity. I don't have a DI person that I can hand off my rushes or dailies to, and or a sound designer or to be like, hey, can you do this? And so everything, especially in, you have to kind of one man band it, and you have to learn as you go. And in a way, it's kind of good that I've learned some of these things because it's allowed me to appreciate a lot of work that goes into sound design in movies and compositing or CGI work. I mean, it's just amazing to me that you guys can do that stuff, and my hat's off to you guys. I don't have the brain to sit there, and even just creating my own logo, I had to kind of, it took me a while, and I couldn't imagine doing it for a living. Not because it's a negative thing. It's more the idea that it's just so convoluted and complicated that there's an artist in me, but my art, I tell my art through a fucking lens as opposed to drawing or CGI. I just can't wrap my head around this shit for some reason. Same thing with sound design. It's like a hit or miss with me. I kind of judge it by ear, and I'm not, the audiophile that's gonna go out and get an SPL meter and start measuring the distances. And whether I should or not, it's just, I'm the type of guy that for a while was, give me a home theater in a box. Let me just set it up. Turn off all the DSPs. I just want the shit decoded. And my recent home theater in a box was a Sony, and it did a great job. The speakers kind of crapped out, but the unit itself was very, very good and reliable. So I ended up buying tower speakers and a huge center speaker and some bookshelf speakers, and I was like, you know, let me just really get some good speakers, and got a Klipsch subwoofer. But before that, I had a Polk. Well, I had a whole Polk audio system, and the subwoofer kind of. Well, before I get ahead of that, I got definitely better sound out of the speakers hooked up to the home theater. I replaced the home theater in a box speakers with the Polk audio, and huge difference. But I came to a point not that long ago, about a month or so ago, where I was just not satisfied with that. You know, I had got my TV professionally calibrated, and I'd gotten the Oppo Blu-ray player, so I was just like, I had taken care of the video end as far as I could take it, and I kind of felt like I was kind of slacking in the audio department, because these lossless audio tracks are just beautiful, and I'm sure I wasn't getting the best out of them. So I said, okay, you know, I'm gonna buy an AVR, dedicated AVR. You know, I'm done home theater in a box in it. I want a dedicated AVR. I haven't had one in a couple of years. So I went out and read some reviews on HomeTheater.com, AVS forums, so on and so forth. But it kind of came down to two in the price range that I was looking for. And one company I'm very familiar with, the other company I wasn't, because I was, you know, out of the game for a while in terms of AVR. I think my last AVR was in the late 90s, early 2001 was my last AVR. And I think it was a Sony as well. So I wasn't aware of new technology and what. I just knew that I needed a dedicated AVR to pump out not only the power needed, the 'cause what would happen with the home theater in a box is that it would shut down on me if it got too loud, or if a noise got too loud, the system couldn't handle it. So I was like, well, let me get an AVR, and you know, so my speakers, the AVR amp can handle it, and the speakers and this, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, so I went shopping. So I Denon, the 1913, and the Sony, I forgot the fucking number on it. So I ended up going with the Sony. It had a built-in Wi-Fi AVR. I had some good reviews and whatnot. And so I had it for a month, and that entire month, to keep a long story short, I guess, because I want to get to the Denon thing, is I did the, they have their these new technology, I guess, is the to help take the guesswork out of setting up your speakers, which is these calibration microphones, that automated calibration microphones. You stick it in the sweet spot, the money seat, whatever you want to call it, you know, does a bunch of bleeps around the room with each speaker, and then it kind of calculates, and it does apparently equates how far the sound hits you and whatnot. It does kind of all the math for you, where how far apart your speakers are, where the listening position, tries to get you that the best sound for your environment. Now, Sony has a proprietary one, which isn't very, very good or very accurate. And the thing that I came across with the Sony AVR was there was a lot of sound processing, DSPs involved to get, and I turned them all off, and for some reason, I couldn't get the sound to sound good. It was either too loud, too low, and you know, for the life of me, I also had the subwoofer hooked up wrong, because I didn't know there was a dedicated LFE channel, and that's the way it should be. And then I had to read up on crossover hertz and setting your speakers as so small instead of large. So I kind of learned all this stuff, and even after some of this stuff, I still couldn't get it to sound good. So I fucking got fed up. And then to top it all off, the Polk subwoofer that I got crapped out on me for some reason. Started making these weird noises, and I guess it is a defect. It's happened I think three times in the certain subwoofer that I bought, to different people. Otherwise, it had good reviews, so I guess I was one of the unlucky ones. So I was like, okay, well, I'm still within the 60-day return policy, because I was a Best Buy Silver or some shit like platinum. I don't know what they call it, but I have 60 days to return instead of 30 days. So I was like, you know, let me just take back the AVR and just try out the Denon 1913. One of the reasons was because I've heard that Odyssey multi-EQ, it was amazing. Even the bare bones one had good reviews, and Denon is well respected. And so I was like, you know, let me just return it. It's the same price, so it's a switch for a switch. And I went with the Klipsch subwoofer this time, and you know, fucking all I gotta tell you is much better quality design. And the LFE, I definitely connected the LFE channel directly. And what I found is that even the bare bones Odyssey multi-EQ, it's the same kind of microphone automation, but it's like more intuitive, more in depth. So instead of taking one listening position measurement, it take you you put it in different like six different spots, up to six different spots for the bare bones one. There's an eight spots for higher version. I think there's even like a 32 Odyssey multi EQ spot. It just and what it does is it takes these six different measurements from your room. And what it does, instead of putting a digital sound processing filter on, which Sony wanted to do, it had like Sony's engineer mode or Sony's dynamic mode or some, you know, it just wasn't what I wanted. I didn't want to mask the audio with some fucking sound processing. But what Odyssey does is it's room equalization. It doesn't do any sound processing, but it does equalize the speakers to conform to the disadvantages of your environment, your acoustical environment. And a lot of us don't have very good treated rooms. You know, there's many different reasons. You know, either you rent a house where you're not allowed to mess with the walls. It costs a lot of money to put in insulation and padding and whatnot. You can buy dampeners, like these wedges, these foam wedges, and put them up. But I didn't really think about that. So now I have I kind of got lost. I'm just fucking amazed with Odyssey. It is what my point is. It took the six measurements and equated the distance and whatnot. And the only thing I had to change, I did read that, you know, if you have your center speaker at a not a very ideal place, which is in sorts of a cabinet or very low, below the TV, you could turn it up 1 or 2 decibels. I did it 1.5 decibels because the center speaker is in a non-ideal place. It's very low and it's in this cabinets of sorts. It's the only place that I can house the center speaker at the time, and it's cool because the Polk, you can reverse it, and on the reverse side it flips up, so the speaker is kind of tilted up, facing at your ear, so it helps out a lot. But what I noticed is that the center speaker was being dampened by the rest of the other channels. So you know, I did the I think 1.5 decibel raise on the center speaker, and everything just came to life. The dialogue is so clear. The surround it hits you the way it should. It feels just almost like you're wearing headphones. You feel. And it took a lot of the echoness out in the reverb. Obviously, it's not going to perform miracles, but it does do what it says it's supposed to do. And the cool thing is that it takes, like I said, it takes into account the amount of noise, background noise that's well it's doing. So you have to be very quiet when you're running this test, and you have to make sure that you stay in this triangle sorts of you don't go outside the speakers, you know, you don't put the microphone like way outside where the speaker isn't, and you keep your normal stuff in, like if you have blankets or a chair, you don't want to move that stuff because if it's normally there, it'll take in count these things. And that's what it's supposed to do. And it equalizes, as opposed to, it doesn't process the sound. It just equalizes it to your room, and it takes the measurements, and it equalizes, and it gets you the best sound for your acoustical, challenged room. And boy, does it ever. It was very simple, and after 30 days of pulling my hair out with the Sony, I'm finally happy with the Denon. It's been running good. I'll give it 30 days to see how it does, if I'm still happy with it. Within those 30 days, I'm gonna buy sound dampening from Audimute. They provide these bass traps, and I'm kind of all new to this, but I'm gonna try and make my room an anechoic chamber of sorts. I'm trying to make it as soundproof as possible, not only for the neighbors, but to reduce reverb, echoes, vibrations. So when I watch a movie, the sound is hitting me the way it should be hitting me. I get the best out of just the best sound you can possibly get. Also, when I do a lot of editing work or podcasts, I have three kids and three cats, and I can't always tell them to be quiet and whatnot. And when I do a podcast, I have to make sure that everything's quiet. So it just makes sense to buy these decorative. And they are kind of nice looking. You can buy different patterns and whatnot and colors. It's audimute.com, I think. Go check them out. They got some really cool stuff at affordable prices. So I'll let you guys know pretty much how, if my sound, 'cause, and also with Odyssey, anytime you change your speaker position, or if you decide to move furniture around in the spatial area, that you have to run Odyssey again, just so it can kind of equate the new configuration that you've either placed your speakers in or your environment furniture. So, once I put the dampening stuff and bass traps, I'm gonna redo the Odyssey and see how it makes a difference. I'm just, like I said, amazed that this technology exists, and it's pretty awesome. Odyssey did what I couldn't do. I was trying to do it by ear with the Sony, and it's a fucking pull my hair out, dude. And I didn't want to go as far as to hire someone to do it, because I already spent money hiring someone to professionally calibrate my television, and I bought the Apple Blu-ray player. And so with the sound, I was like, well, if I can get away with cutting a corner. And I had read really good reviews on Odyssey, and I did. I followed a lot of people's not setups, but tips and tricks to get Odyssey to perform the measurements correctly, and what to change, what not to change. And ultimately, my fucking speakers never sounded better. So what I wanted to kind of just pump is, like, if you're in the market for an AVR, definitely Denon. I would buy something with Odyssey multi EQ. I know Marantz. There's a Marantz AVR that I'm fucking drooling over that has one of the best Odyssey. I can't remember what it's called, the version of the Odyssey. But that's for another time. I'm very happy with what I got right now, and I just wanna. I don't know. I just felt like sucking. Fucking sucking off Odyssey. I just wanted to really pump it out there. I'm just so jazzed about my sound system now, and the lossless audio sounds that are coming from the Blu-rays are just so incredible. It almost breathed new life into my entire system. And sound does make a huge difference. And I didn't realize how much until I did this, and I learned that there's a lot that goes into correcting a room for sound. And I may be off completely, but to me it sounds good and way better. I trust Odyssey way better than my ears could dial it in. So if you are sort of like me, you're kind of looking to get a dedicated AVR, but you want to find one that has an easy setup, I would go with an Odyssey one and have it do its measurements and just kind of tweak it a little bit. Just make sure you go to Odyssey's website and you read their tips and tricks, AVS forum. I found a great how to do Odyssey on Blu-ray.com. And it's this whole page on what you should do, what you should not do, tips and tricks about bass, how you should set up your subwoofer. So just make sure you kind of do a little bit of reading. It does, it's not gonna magically do it itself. You have to make sure you connect everything right. And like I told you previously, I had my subwoofer connected the wrong way, and I wasn't getting the optimum performance. And now I am, but it just encouraged me to go that step further and be like, you know what? I want to buy fucking bass traps, and I want to dampen this room as much as possible to get that fucking awesome theater sound. And because I have hardwood floors, and with area rugs, it only covers up so much. So I really want to make sure that I'm getting the best. It just encouraged me to get more into audio, and I wasn't really that into it, and I learned a lot. And I think that it's a very hard job to do, and not something that I want to make a career out of, but something that I learned. And I appreciate you guys, people that set up home theaters, people that do sound design for movies, CGI compositors, things, editors, everything that in post that I have to do as an extra. Like I said, my forte is directing and camera operation, and picking my lenses, and a little bit of cinematography is where I feel most comfortable. In the post process, I gotta give it to you guys, man. You editors, you sound designers, compositors are amazing. And I just want to fucking just tell you guys that this discovery, pretty much, had I not gone through this process, I probably wouldn't have learned to appreciate what what it takes to not only create good audio, but what it takes to create good visuals in terms of CGI and whatnot. Because it kind of fell flat on me. It's one of those things where it was more of a chore than something I like to do. It was things that I have to do out of necessity because I don't have. One day God willing that, IKP takes off, and we're able to hire people that specialize in those things, and I can hand my footage off, or my rushes, my dailies, or whatever you want to call it. Just everything in post that I can have a dedicated person that specializes in editing, compositing, sound design, and do a way better fucking job than I can do. I fucking probably suck at it compared to a professional, but that's the whole thing. When you're a director, you have eventually you have a core group that you hand your footage off, and right now I'm micromanaging everything because it's hard to find people that can do it for free for a little while because right now we're nonprofit, we're still learning different things. More or less coming from it from an amateur standpoint, especially when it comes to the post side of stuff. Like I said, sound falls and compositing fall very low on my ability to do those things. So I rarely do. I do as much sound as I can. It's easier for me to do sound than compositing. So, but at the same time, I usually try to do as much effects or camera tricks in camera as opposed to having to do. I'm not a very big on CG in terms of if it can be done in camera, I'd rather have it done in camera than have to resort to a computer generated image. Not because I don't respect or like it. It's just it's easier for me to do that because I don't have the skills to be a great compositor. So if I could, do it old school and find a creative way around the problem, then I usually try and do that. That's my approach. But once again, my hat's off to you guys. Hopefully this information will encourage you to go out and buy an AVR, or at least if you're in the market for an AVR, choose one with Odyssey Multi EQ. And don't skimp on your speakers, man. Buy a couple towers, a couple bookshelves, mid-range, man. Bass, sexy. Offer, good prices. There's good priced speakers. One thing, do not skimp on the center channel. I will say that. It's your most important speaker. And try and make sure you have all match speakers, just due to the fact that if you mix and match speakers, it's harder to get a what would you say? What would I call it? Universal sound, I guess you could say. I'm fucking lost for words. I'm fucking stupid right now. When you buy matched speakers, it's easier for the sound to travel around you in a 5.1 or 7.1 or 7.2, whatever setup you have, more fluidly or organically. I'm fucking lost for words right now for what it, I can't figure out the word I'm looking for. But it creates a more unified sound as opposed to mixing and matching speakers. You don't get, and I that was another mistake I made when I first bought the tower speakers, as I mixed and matched Pioneer and Polk, and I was getting good sound, but it wasn't really meshing well. It wasn't blending, if you will, like it should. It should be seamless blend of audio that passes from right to left to center to behind, left and right to the sub. So when you buy matched speakers, it the sound blends and seamlessly, and you can't tell sometimes where the sound is coming from, which especially ambiotic noise, you shouldn't be able to tell, especially where the sound is coming from, because it should feel like it's all around you at times, depending on the mix. Sometimes you do get a bad DTS mix or WG or True HD mix or whatever, but especially the subwoofer shouldn't be able to point out where the low frequency effects are coming from. But those are the only things I can kind of tell you that I wanted to really talk about. Was exciting, so I'm happy now. And in fact, I'm gonna watch a movie right now before I go to bed, and I'll do a podcast. I'll do a recap on how well the Denon survived its 30-day, 60-day trial, and how the new subwoofer, the Klipsch, handles. See if it craps out on me. Hopefully, it doesn't, like the Polk did. But also, I'll do a recap and, like I said, tell you if the dampening made a difference, how much of a difference, how much dampening I put in the room, how many bass traps did it take to, whether it was one, two, three. I'll give you all that information once we go through it. But I'm also trying to get my cousin. He's a CGI artist, and he's worked on many Hollywood movies. A lot of them, there's a big one that he's working on right now that's gonna come out this summer. I can't really talk about it, but he said he went to Japan for vacation. Said when he comes back from Japan, he wants to be on the show, and I think that's great because it'll give us an insight on compositing work and what it takes to do that. I'm very curious to learn how the industry, treats compositors, whether they just hand them the footage and expect miracles, or whether they give them good reference material. How hard is it? Do you get tired of looking at the same face if it's a face you have to composite or track or key out of a certain situation or comp? I just want to know everything because I'm sure he's got some stories. And especially he can elaborate on the big Hollywood movies he's worked on and which cameras from the footage he's worked on, which key the best, whether the Red, Alexa's. He's worked on Red footage, Alexa footage, and I believe some film footage. So I'm just really interested in his work, and we're gonna have him on and talk about what he does and get a little insight on what compositors and CGI artists do, or if they're called the same thing, if they're considered the same thing. But that should be coming soon, hopefully. We can get that going. But thanks for stopping by for another Impulse Kitty Productions digital film podcast. So take it easy, guys, and hopefully I didn't bore you too much. I'm still trying to get someone to play off of, but once again, you got me. Sorry. One man band right now. But thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.